Finding a service solution that helps you keep customers happy can feel impossible, just like trying to remember the name of that guy you literally just met at a networking event. HubSpot's all-new Service Hub can help, with the service solution part at least. It brings service and success together on one powerful platform, with an AI-powered help desk and chatbot to handle your frontline tickets, so you can scale support and drive retention and revenue. Visit HubSpot.com/service to learn more. It's Sunday. You know what that means. I'm John Weigel, and this is the weekend edition of the Hustle Daily Show. Ownership is a bit dicey when it comes to AI. Text-to-image and text-to-video models are making a mark in the creative industry, leading many creative professionals to believe their work may be replaceable. Regardless of these fears, the creative world is undergoing a huge change, and it may have a few bright spots. Creatives who can learn to train AI models can mimic their own style, and now there is a company looking to help those creatives ensure ownership of their AI-infused work. The company in question is Invoke AI, whose CEO Kent Kersey joins us today to discuss how AI ownership extends into the gaming world and how companies and studios can use AI to enhance their creativity. So let's get into it. All right, welcome, Kent. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How's everything going?
It's been a busy week. We've been at GDC, the Game Developers Conference, as well as NVIDIA's GTC. So we've been hustling.
Good week for you, I guess, and the team.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
I kind of mentioned up top of the intro a little bit about Invoke AI, but can you just tell me a little bit about starting Invoke AI and the mission and what problem you're kind of looking to solve?
Yeah, so the story of Invoke is kind of interesting. Just to give you some history and context, Stable Diffusion, which is an open source AI model, was released in August of 2022. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, it was kind of pretty hot, right? Everyone was kind of talking about it. It was accessible and people were able to learn a lot about how the technology was going to evolve and work. I kind of stumbled onto a project that had been started by, funny enough, a cancer researcher out of Ontario. He's the head of adaptive oncology at the Ontario Institute of Cancer Research. And he had just thrown together a small script that allowed people to run this locally on their machine. So it just made it accessible. It made it easy for people to use. And so I downloaded it, immediately kind of fell down the rabbit hole of asking questions around how are we going to create with this new technology? What can we do with it? And, you know, over time became a maintainer of that project. We ended up adding a UI UX. We were one of the earliest projects in the space to have a full canvas that an artist could use to edit parts of an image rather than the whole thing. And that just very quickly evolved into a robust application that artists and creatives were using, obviously because we had intended for those to be the types of users that we catered to and served. And, you know, it was, I think, early 2023 when I saw the opportunity, because we saw so many professionals coming in asking how they could deploy this to their teams and how they could use this at their studios, that we saw the opportunity to sustain our work in open source by building more of those business solutions. And we also saw what was happening around these businesses tailoring and customizing these AI models to what they do and how they create. And so you started to see these evolve from more kind of generic tools where all the output looks very similar or doesn't really give you a lot of control, into more specialized tools that have the capability to understand an artist's creative language and give them controllability, like being able to pass in a sketch and having that be controlled by the AI during the generation process, effectively saying to the AI, you must color inside the lines I give you. So for an artist and a creative, that gives them a lot more of what they're looking for with AI. They're not rolling the dice with a text prompt. They're actually instructing the AI what it should do during that generation.
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating to give them kind of the authority to be able to dictate the models as they see fit. I'm wondering just specifically on that, how exactly do they do that? In your experience seeing artists kind of work with AI, how do they tend to integrate with it and start to train these models to kind of actively take on their artistic style?
The way that I like to describe it, it's an analogy, is these models, like the foundation models, are kind of like a big dictionary of visual language. You know, cat looks kind of like this. This is what a cat's going to look like. This is what a fire hydrant's going to look like. Whatever the thing is, it's kind of this big dictionary of terms. And what an artist is able to do is inject new words into that dictionary. So I'm going to either redefine an existing word or I'm going to introduce one like my style. And when I tell you I want something in my style, this is what that looks like. Mm. And so it's a matter of showing enough examples to the AI and kind of teaching it what that terminology means. But it also gives you a lot of creative control for redefining existing terminology in the dictionary. So you can kind of reimagine what certain terms mean and how they should be used, and then incorporate that in the generation process. So when you're prompting, you're not fighting with words and kind of, you know, trying to figure out what the model's going to interpret your words to mean. You have already had this kind of previous conversation, if you will, of this is what I mean when I say this. And it's learned that and incorporated that into that tool.
Wow.
As far as like how this is being deployed by artists, I think where you start to see this become a really valuable enhancer in their workflow is when they realize they can control things with inputs like a sketch. And so you start to see the prompt, if you will, is much more than just text. It is, I want to give you my sketch and I want you to adhere to this specifically. And these are the parts that I have a strong perspective about. You can even do things like pass in reference images. So you can do a side sketch or previous artwork that you've done and pass that in as reference to try to mimic your style or mimic certain concepts inside of the reference image that you've provided. And that effectively allows you a lot of different dimensions of controllability as you're generating, ultimately allowing you to produce an asset that's much more of what you had in mind. Mm. And when you get that, I think it's still important to recognize artists aren't just taking the AI output and running with that. They're really using this as a way of creating composited outputs. So they're still using technology like Photoshop. They're taking these outputs and using this as a way of generating resources for them to composite together in Photoshop in order to create that final vision. Mm. They're still painting over certain pieces or iterating on that. But let's talk about the average concept artist for a studio. They might be given a task to come up with a new skin for the latest and greatest game. The way that works is a concept artist is going to come up with a couple of ideas. They're kind of iterating back and forth with their creative director. Mm-hmm. And it takes time to come up with, you know, good concepts. You've got to kind of work through that. But these are just rough sketches. These are mostly like, I came up with a couple of ideas and now we're going to have this back and forth. Creative director is going to say, I like the shoulder pads on this. And I like the chest piece here. You had a really cool idea for these legs or whatever. And it kind of becomes this iterative process between people.
Sure.
When you have an AI assistant there, like, you know, our tool provides, you can get through more iterations more quickly. And you're able to shrink that time and produce something that meets your standard for quality because it knows your style and it knows kind of the language you're using. It can be a matter of days to get to an answer with that type of technology. Wow. Obviously, you know, the time it takes to generate a single image is almost inconsequential. It's like 6 or 10 seconds.
Right.
But what this is doing is it's giving artists more optionality, more resources to use to get to that 90% line. And then they're able to kind of finish out that piece and get that ultimately polished asset created in a fraction of the time they used to be able to do that.
When you think about something like this, it seems like artist teams can become smaller because of this, I'm assuming. And we've kind of seen this AI wave come in and definitely seen a bunch of layoffs across the board.
Yeah.
You're at Game GDC right now. A lot of people in gaming have been laid off. A lot of people in tech have been laid off. And maybe the main reason isn't exactly AI integration, but some are saying that it could be a possibility.
Right.
Do you kind of see teams changing in the future in like the gaming industry and the creative industry to kind of slim down to reflect more of this model of just a few people or one artist kind of driving the ship?
It's a complicated one, right? I think if you look at the layoffs, you know, COVID kind of created this narrative that we were all going to be in the metaverse and in a digital world for the rest of our lives. And you
That's
know,
right.
I think everyone is collectively sighing a breath of relief that that didn't end up happening and that we're out in the world again. But you know, what ended up happening was people overhired. They staffed up assuming that they were going to be forever digital and kind of in the metaverse and kind of pushing into that dimension. And what I think we've found is that that's not true. And maybe some of the revenues that they anticipated kind of like up and to the right forever on gaming, those haven't materialized. And so people are trying to pull that back, but it's also at the same time as this new tooling is coming out. And I would argue that AI is not necessarily replacing jobs right now, but you have leaders who are trying to grapple with a question of what does game development look like? in the future? Mm-hmm. Like, what are we going to be needing? Who do we need on the team? Do we need small teams? Do we need the same size team? I don't think anybody knows. Mm-hmm. We have the potential for new roles, new ways of building teams, new ways of developing games. And I think we're starting to see that, you know, a lot of the people that you have had on teams previously still have a place in the creative process in the future. And, you know, I think there's maybe a little bit of executive delusion that we can replace all the artists with this machine that you push a button and you get a picture and it's just perfect. And people are realizing that's not true. We need better tools for creatives to accelerate the process. But, you know, as we figure out how to incorporate those into the pipeline, we have to figure out how to change as organizations. We have to figure out how to change as creatives. Transformation is painful. Part of this is us evaluating where we fit into that process in the future. I very candidly came to GDC fully prepared to have tomatoes thrown at me. We had, you know, a ton of artists and art directors. We had everybody who is asking the same question you are in the audience. And I think what we were able to show, especially because we have a lot of examples of what we could do with our tool, this is a tool to empower creatives. And it unlocks a lot of what you can do. Now, will we see smaller teams? I think the answer is probably to some extent, you'll see smaller teams for certain parts. But I think the overall team size is going to stay the same mostly. And we're going to ask more questions around what do we do with all this extra time that we have now? Mm-hmm. Just because we have these tools doesn't mean the idea comes immediately or that that iteration is no longer valuable. It just means you can iterate more quickly and use that time to get to better answers on all dimensions. Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody, I got a great podcast to tell you about. It's called Truth, Lies, and Work, and it's brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. On this show, you can join husband and wife team Al and Leanne Elliott as they dispel myths, impart wisdom, and answer all your questions about finding, keeping, and motivating great people. They actually just did an episode with John Smith, who is the manager and agent of famous Argentinian soccer player Diego Maradona. He talks about in this episode how he was able to manage the global superstar, athlete, celebrity that Maradona is and was. It's a great listen. You better get out there and check it out. And you can listen to Truth, Lies, and Work wherever you get your podcasts.
I really like the point you made just now about AI not necessarily replacing people, especially in the creative industry, but people kind of using AI and working with it and being augmented by it. There is something that I wanted to ask about ownership, because I know Invoke says a lot about ownership. And, you know, when you create something in the platform that is yours and you own the IP and you own the copyright, could you break down for me when somebody makes a text to image or something online, when somebody makes a text to video online or even text to audio nowadays, they have who exactly owns that when you create something using an AI model?
So this gets into one of my favorite topics of the current era, which is intellectual property law. And I think there's a lot of interesting questions that we have to grapple with as a society around intellectual property. But we'll talk about what we know right now and where we're going. So the Copyright Office has pretty much stated in the last maybe a year ago, year and a half ago, they stated that outputs of AI systems lack human expression. So like text to image is not a process where the human is expressing something in the output. And so what that means is very critical. Like, human expression is what copyright is for. Human expression is what is protected by copyright. And it's the very specific thing that you have expressed through the artwork, right? You as a human have created something that is represented by this piece, and that is what is protected by copyright. So the ruling said, you know, a text to image or a text to video does not have human expression, therefore is not protectable by copyright. So that's kind of the base assumption. But, and this is kind of where things get complicated and where it becomes a little bit more of a nuanced conversation, the tools have evolved, you know, to the point where you just type in a text prompt and get an image, right? So with Invoke, you can go in and draw a sketch and have that control the generation. You can iterate, you can draw over what you've created and reimagine that piece. And so you have this cycle of human iteration and human expression, and it is very like central and core to the process of using our tool. That is human expression, right? I think it's very difficult to argue that if you have a drawing and put it through the system, that that is not human expression. Now, the question that we have to answer, and the U.S. Copyright Office, I think, is at this point still struggling with what the right answer is because they're trying to wait until they have more information. But the way to think about it is, as an artist or a creative, when you draw the picture originally, that sketch, that is protected by copyright. That's your human expression. When you pass it through the AI system, one of two things is true. Either the AI is transforming that, guided by your human expression, and your human expression is in the output, and therefore it is protected there, or that AI process is derivative in nature, which means that maybe the output itself is not copyrighted, but your input is, your sketch is, and so your core human expression is still protected through that process. Mm. Now, you could also take the output and composite that and put that together in Photoshop and paint over it. And by doing that, you are injecting human expression into those pieces. And now the Copyright Office has some things around, like, this gets into like the legal absurdity of all of this. Uh-huh. They might claim that you only get copyright over the layers on top of the AI work and not the copyright of the thing underneath it.
Wow.
But it kind of gets to the point where you're just asking questions like, okay, but what does that mean? And practically, how does that differ from having copyright on the output anyways? But this is something that we take very seriously. We inject into every image that we generate metadata about how that image was created. So all the way down to every individual setting, the sketch that was put in, whatever an artist puts into that output, we have that data captured and we can demonstrate this is where human expression was involved in the creation of this asset. And that is a big piece, especially for larger companies starting to incorporate this, that they want to have that audit trail or demonstration that, look, this isn't just an AI output. This is a lot of human expression involved in that process.
Thank you. That was very eloquent.
Yeah.
It's just a very murky situation when you create something through AI. And, you know, you were saying just now, when you layer it with something on Photoshop, that's maybe considered copyrightable and like the original image just isn't. So there's definitely a lot that needs to be figured out legally about this.
Yeah.
But for you, kind of going forward with Invoke in the kind of industry as a whole, I feel like the future is happening every day and the next big thing could be tomorrow or the next week in AI.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, where do you see this heading for the future? Do you think that this concept of allowing creators to own their created images and own their creations is going to open up a new market of businesses in the future?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's so much with this technology that still involves creativity and creators. The way that we're seeing this be rolled out at the creator level for commercial artists and professionals, nobody that I'm aware of is really seriously thinking that this isn't going to be widely used. Everyone thinks that this technology is here to stay, that we're mostly dealing with questions of how do we deploy this technology rather than if it's going to end up, you know, being useful, right?
Yeah.
And so what that means, I think, for a lot of people asking questions about, like, where is my role as an artist? You know, we're going to see commercial artists incorporate this. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. You can train this to understand your visual language, but as an artist, you're able to do a lot more because you have the generative capacity to teach the AI model more of what you want to teach it. You can show it more concepts. You can kind of create that thing. And when you have that asset, that model, you can use it. But you might also at some point in the future see people start to sell their AI model for others to use, almost like brush packs in Photoshop, right? That's just another tool in the toolkit. And then it becomes an entire ecosystem of people kind of helping others create and providing tools for creation and providing services that are related to this process. I think just like with every technology, you know, we see a shift where we start to realize certain things that we've been doing aren't really needed in the process, but those skills still apply. We just have to learn the new tools and the new market and ecosystem to participate in. And that's where we're at now. I think there was this fear that we had reached the point where AI was replacing us, right? It's like, we don't need anybody anymore. We're just going to, like, you know, push a button and it's going to make the game. And almost everyone's seen behind the curtain now on ChatGPT, on like pretty much everything. And we realize, okay, it's cool, but it's not making like the next award-winning novel. It's not doing that on its own. It's not creating works of art that you know, outshine and replace human artists. It is a tool.
Right.
And now that we know that, we can ask better questions about what tomorrow holds and where do we fit into the picture. And we're not replaced by it, but it does change things. And we have to figure out how are we going to grow and adapt into that market that is evolving.
Right. And as it improves, how are we going to improve with it? Because it's improving very fast, of course. Still can't write me a good episode of Friends, though. But, you know, it's getting there.
It's close. Close.
Yeah.
I think historically, creators have had to do really bold projects that make an impact on the world. You've had to work with really large teams, and you've had to partner with very large studios and publishers. And I think what this technology does is it changes that dynamic. It makes smaller teams able to do more things. I mean, I've said this before, maybe I'm just like an optimist, but I think we're going to see a renaissance of creativity. We're going to see movies that haven't been greenlit because you've got some big exec who's scared of change and scared of doing something new. Mm-hmm. But you've got, you know, the creator who wants to make that, they're going to be able to make that movie. So we're going to have better movies that aren't just formulaic rehashes of the last 40 movies in that franchise, mm-hmm. right? We all know which one I'm talking about. We're going to see games that, you know, have novel mechanics. We're going to see more that really speaks to us because it is being created by a human who's guiding that. And they now have the capability to make that real.
Right.
And that just makes me super excited because I am looking forward to watching really good movies and playing awesome games and having people be able to create what they imagine.
Yeah. And that is really exciting when you put it that way. And also something else exciting you kind of mentioned earlier was talking at GDC and you kind of made a few announcements there. What's new? What's going on with Invoke?
Well, yeah, this week's been a big week for us. So we went live with our kind of larger studio enterprise product in January. And late last week, and as part of the announcement this week, we announced basically a workflow capability that allows for teams to deploy this to people who aren't yet there with all of the control capabilities. They can still get the value of the tool without having that huge learning curve, right? Because this is an entirely new suite of tools. You know, let's say someone from the 1600s being time traveled into Photoshop era and being put in front of Photoshop. And it's like, okay, make me art. That person's going to be like, what is this, right? Like, even if they knew what computers are, there's a ton of capabilities and features. And it's like this massive learning curve. I remember when I was playing around this stuff, I've been a kind of a creative spirit for a long time. Back in the day, you watched YouTube videos to learn how to do Photoshop stuff, right? You're like, oh, that's how I can get that specific look I'm going for, is I've got to add a layer and blur it and do an overlay. Like,
and do a mask.
You learn these techniques.
Yeah,
exactly. Uh-huh. You have to learn all the techniques, right? And that's where we've gotten to with the technology. We've been moving super quickly. So now when you get into Invoke, there's this like list of options and controls. And you're like, what does that all mean? And we try our best. We've got a lot of educational content on YouTube to help artists understand how they can use it. But, you know, where most organizations are right now, they have an entire team. They're trying to figure out how do we incorporate this today and ease our team into this. And our workflows solution gives them a very targeted list of things that they can do. Let's say, for example, you wanted to create a workflow for an artist where you pass in a sketch and it helps you complete that. Rather than having to learn the entire interface, you can actually go in and load up the sketch workflow. And all you have to do is upload your sketch and type in a prompt, and it will do all of the rest. So it lets an artist use the tool without having to learn all the bells and whistles, and then you kind of gradually get into the more advanced interface as they get more comfortable. Mm-hmm. We also were at NVIDIA's GTC.
That's right.
We partnered with NVIDIA and Dell. Effectively, what we've done is we've made it super easy for people to start using our open source project locally on their machine using AI Workbench. So NVIDIA announced AI Workbench, I believe it was a few months ago, and that went generally available earlier this week. We are one of the first projects to partner with AI Workbench and release our application through AI Workbench. So it becomes just downloading and kind of hitting install, and then you get Invoke locally on your machine. And Dell was part of that. They're really good partners, and they've been doing a lot for local hardware as well as cloud hardware in the realm of AI. And so on one of their laptops, we actually load Invoke up and generate a really high quality image in about 6 seconds locally on the laptop. And we can do that all really easily through AI Workbench. So like this partnership with NVIDIA and Dell has really allowed us to show a lot of the larger enterprises how they could start deploying this to their teams and how they can leverage compute at the edge. Because AI, you probably have heard a lot about compute, right? Compute is the thing that all the AI companies want. It's more compute, and that is GPUs. And so that's why NVIDIA is doing so well right now. But an organization has GPUs on laptops. They have GPUs in the workstations that artists have. And so rather than having to rely on some centralized AI system, they can use the GPUs that are already on their artist machines. And it makes the artist not have to wait in a queue, not have to wait on someone else to generate an image. They can really incorporate this in their workflow. So we're working with those partners to evaluate how we can make that a reality and make this easy for enterprises to kind of solve that problem.
Wow. That's great. I mean, it sounds like you guys have some big things coming, and working with NVIDIA and Dell is massive, but NVIDIA is kicking ass right now.
They are. They are doing pretty well.
Oh my God. They're doing pretty great right now. They're getting write-ups left and right. Yeah. We've been talking about them on the podcast a bunch lately too. But yeah, Kat, I really appreciate you coming here to talk to us today, because I feel like AI and creativity is such an interesting subject for a lot of people. And I'm glad you have the perspective that it's more optimistic, that it's kind of grouped together with creativity and can help create some awesome stuff in the future. So I really look forward to what you go do and what Invoke does and what the whole industry does in the very near future. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was real fun.